Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Little question, this last year has been trying, messy for students, teachers, parents, everybody. School is such a vital part of everyday life for families. The COVID interruptions, pretty devastating. New poll out today reflects that overwhelming majority of parents believe their kids lost ground academically during the pandemic.
And with schools now getting back to some kind of normalcy, the task ahead for teachers and administrators is to make up for a lost year, and that's going to be tremendously challenging. Morgan Polakoff is an associate professor of education at USC's Rossiter School of Education. Thank you for joining us. So can that be done? Can they catch up?
Sure. I think that there's every reason to believe that kids can be caught up. I think, you know, certainly if we're back in person in the fall, many kids will just get back on track from sort of business as usual. But I think that there's also a lot of dollars flowing towards what should be really concerted efforts on the parts of schools and districts to try and address, you know, the so-called learning loss, right? Through things like tutoring, extended days, extended weeks, you know, summer opportunities. So there's no question that kids can be caught up. It's more a matter of will and policy, I would say, than, you know, whether it can be done.
Well, I guess it depends on our definition of catching up. How much time do you think they lost? What do they need help in? You mentioned some of the things that may be on the table, and LAUSD is talking about, let's add another couple weeks here or there. They're going to vote on that. Maybe some kids are definitely going to need summer school. You know, there's some proposals that say, let's just repeat everybody, but I don't think there's appetite for that.
No, I don't think that there's appetite for that. And I'm not totally sure that there's need for that either. I think that, you know, what will make much more sense is really diagnosing where kids are at and then doing our best to sort of tailor our supports and interventions based on what we learn about what students need. Rather, you know, some students probably got something close to a full year's education out of the last year, and some students really clearly did not. And so rather than treating everyone the same, we should sort of treat everyone proportional to what they need.
And, you know, we're not just talking about the, you know, some kids kind of fell behind academically, as some parents believe, but also there's the social aspect, too, the socialization that kids do when they go to school. And it's more important for some ages than others. But do you give a lot of credence to that some kids have lost ground sociologically, too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, social and emotional well-being, I think, is an important, is clearly an important outcome of schooling. And it's something that, you know, I think doesn't get as much attention because it doesn't get measured. There's a lot of concern about whether students have fallen behind in terms of their social development, also in terms of issues like mental health. And again, I think, you know, we really need to understand how big a problem this is. So what my hope is that districts and maybe the state can support really careful measurement of where kids are at as they come back in the classroom so that we can, again, use that information to target, you know, interventions and supports.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I was reading an article earlier, and there was a couple paragraphs in there advocating for either some year-end testing or some early next-year testing to kind of figure out what did you come away with this last year. And, of course, everybody loses something over the summer. I seem to remember every summer in high school and elementary school, you come back and you're like, oh, I forgot some of that stuff. But is the testing, you think, an accurate enough indicator? Because, you know, there's all sorts of arguments over whether standardized testing and stuff actually, you know, works.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, this is a really tricky issue. And the federal government, the Biden administration's Department of Education, has said that states and that school districts must test unless there are some real extenuating circumstances, like kids actually aren't in school. I mean, from my standpoint, I would personally find it to be more useful to do assessment when kids get back in the fall, as opposed to trying to get some kind of assessment done right now. People are still coming down from, you know, what has been a very difficult year in terms of the pandemic. And I just think getting kids to test right now doesn't really make too much sense. You know, and then in the fall, whether it's a state test or whether it's, you know, school districts often have their own what are called interim assessments that they use. Often these are provided by outside corporations. Whether it's that kind of assessment, yes, I think there does need to be some measurement. But hopefully, as you say, it would be sort of something that's useful to teachers in thinking about how to plan instruction, not just an exercise for, you know, compliance with federal mandates.
This is the worst pandemic we've had in 100 years. So in a lot of ways, the response that the education system had to come up with was flying by the seat of their pants and making up for online learning and trying to set that up on the fly as it goes on. So is there an opportunity here? Because, you know, there are going to be other epidemics and maybe even another bad pandemic that would shut everything down again. Can the education system maybe build in some infrastructure so that we're better able to handle the next one for kids?
I think that we've seen that schools and districts have gotten better at this over the course of the last year. I think that, yes, clearly we should be prepared for the next one. I worry a little bit about, you know, getting to a place where it's really easy for kids to do hybrid learning in a non-pandemic time, because I worry that it encourages people to do, you know, to do school from home in ways that I might actually disadvantage some kids. So I really would hope that the vast majority of kids are educated in person in the fall, especially if, you know, rates are anything like they are right now. Yes, I think that schools and districts should be prepared for something like this in the future, but also this was a once in 100-year situation and may never happen for another 100 years. So we wouldn't want to allocate all of our resources to figuring that out. I think we really do want to plan for doing the best we can next year on the assumption that the vast majority of kids are going to be in person.
We talk so much about the bad and how online learning has been a struggle for a lot of kids. Has there been any silver lining that you've gleaned through this, you know, forced experiment?
Well, you know, I mean, one interesting thing is that when you ask parents how it's gone, they actually are pretty positive about it, which surprises a lot of us wonks out there who are very pessimistic by nature. But I think, you know, even in this poll that was released today, 65% of adults supported how local school districts have handled things. So overall, parents are actually pretty positive about it. I will also say there are kids who have clearly benefited from a kind of a schooling from home situation. Those might be kids who were bullied, kids who didn't fit in, kids who, you know, don't really need the socialization of a regular classroom. Those could be kids who are really advanced. And I think it's worth trying to figure out who did do well and who didn't do well. And again, I think this also speaks to this key point about measurement. We need to understand what worked and what didn't and for whom, so that we can do better moving forward.
Well, you learn independence too as you kind of grow up, and maybe this was a push in that direction for a lot of kids too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, it's been an adjustment for all of us. I've learned a lot of things about myself, and I'm sure that you have learned about yourself as well, and our kids have too. So, you know, the hope is that, yes, with this trauma also comes some resiliency, comes some, you know, a better ability to handle these sorts of things moving forward. And again, you know, I just look at these high level findings that most parents think that schools actually did a pretty good job of, you know, balancing the risks of the pandemic with the need to educate kids. So it's easy to be critical from outside, but actually it was a really difficult job, and schools seem to have done about as well as we could expect them to.
Morgan Polakoff, Associate Professor, Education, USC's Rossier School of Education. Morgan, thanks.